With all of the subtlety of an atomic disassembler shredding your sanity electron by electron, we are the experimental enigma of erratic exaltation, 665.66 UHMR Chemrat Radio. Coming to you live tonight from the bridge of the wrecked abyssal wraith, deep in the frost wastes.
Hive mice, chemrats, sump ghoulies, strap on those five-part harnesses as we dive headfirst into the twisted madness of the glacial gauntlet, Arconia's own demo death race. A world of roaring engines and maniacal grins that blurs the line between safe and suicidal. These heavily armed, barely stable plasma skiffs try bladed ice sledges and twin-tracked nuclear ice dregs are nothing short of metallic madness, bristling and last in autogun's demonic madness. In this ice-cold hell, our high-octane gladiators' reflexes feed on adrenaline and fear. For those about to feed the hungry goddess of ice and cold, we salute you this Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Inhaling the intoxicating fumes of danger and promethium, surrounded by the hellish melody of engine screams, with the ice shivering in anticipation beneath our feet. As always, I am your mohawk-crested and neon-splattered plasma fiend, Goblin King, joined by Chemrat Radio's own maniacal maven of vehicular-driven vengeance, Emmy.
Hello.
And that is our new in podcast lore sport.
I love that. It's canon now.
As I was coming up with it, I was like, this is the game. Like, we've got Murder Ball that can definitely be turned into a board game. This is the second board game.
This is the monster truck one. We can just grab some of those Speed Freaks kits, take some Squig Buggies, and it's canon now.
Make it the worst thing ever. I'm literally picturing Death Race mixed with like Car Wars or Steve Jackson's Car Wars or something. Just figuring out.
Oh my god! I'm doing my army as RuPaul's Death Race, and so they're all like glittered out like pink Mad Max people.
Oh, I love it! I absolutely love it.
Literally slaying, yes, queen.
Literally slaying.
Literally.
On and off the ice.
Yep.
Well, welcome to episode 81, Xeno Spotlight Zotes. While we've talked about Minor Xeno's factions before, and we've even brainstormed a few of our own, we haven't really looked or taken a focused dive into one specifically. And Emmy and I decided what better place to start than with the Zotes.
Hell yeah, the Zotes, or as I call them, the Paw Patrol of the Warhammer Xenos factions.
I never thought of that, and you said it, and I'm like, damn it, this got me. It got me good. I legitimately laughed for a couple of minutes when I saw that.
Good. All right, so what is a Zote, Ryan? Tell me more.
Zotes are one of those unique creatures or examples of creatures that exist in both the Warhammer and the Warhammer 40K universe alongside.
See, I did not know this. I had no idea that they were in the fantasy setting, and that just like
makes it better, right?
Yes.
And of course that would be alongside races such as the Slann and the Old Ones. And there's a couple of other examples, but because of that, we will actually be looking at both sides of the Zotes today. You wanna hit us up with that classic Warhammer
Zote physiology? So the Zotes are centauroid in appearance. If you have paid $3, $6, or $9, you can see what we're looking at here on screen. Having four thick columnar legs and powerful torso with two manipulative arms, they are reptilian, with heavy plates of fused scales covering their shoulders, back, and hindquarters, and are about 6 feet high and 8 feet long. That's scary. Their heads are reminiscent of snakes or turtles, but with a broad, heavily armored skull to accommodate their brains, which are proportionally huge. Their slightly domed skulls, large eyes, and wide mouths give them a wry expression. color ranges from dark brown through maroon to purple.
And that is their Warhammer Fantasy look. And their Warhammer 40K look isn't that much different, but we get a little bit of that, I don't know, that 40K je ne sais quoi.
I like them. They're kind of like goofy, retro, futuristic, you know, very, very old Hammer. I love them.
Yes, they are very old Hammer. So in the Warhammer 40K world, for their physiology, Zotes share a similar six-limbed structure to Tyranid warrior bioforms and others of the Tyranid species, likely being an evolved bioconstruct derived from creatures native to the lost Tyranid homeworld and their remote galaxy of origin, which we still don't know where they come from. They are, again, a centauroid race resembling ancient human myths of centaurs, with two muscular arms and no visible mouths, but a reptilian nature. Zotes use their strong frontal limbs to wield various weapons and have a thick, scaly hide that can serve as their armor. When cut off from the hive mind, about half of the Zotes will develop psychic abilities. Zotes utilize biotechnology, including genetically engineered augmentations to their metabolic and musculostructural system to survive across diverse environments. They also use atmospheric rebreather masks and synthetic organs to help digest alien proteins.
I wrote myself a note here because I did want to discuss their psychic resonator devices.
Yeah, so we will get into, I think when we hit history a little bit later on, we'll talk about their psychic resonator. But yeah, they're in 40K, what does the psychic resonator do?
They are able to kind of transmute messages with their mind, and they're able to like basically translate their language into whatever it is, like whatever alien language, communicate flawlessly with the alien races. Because not only are they like the Tyranid cops, some of them are more like Tyranid diplomats.
The way that they were introduced in Rogue Trader and the way that they kind of move forward are pretty interesting. And the way that we've sort of structured these episodes, these minor Xenos, there's a name, minor Xenos faction Zotes, or wait, faction Xenos faction, what do we call? What is it? Xenos Spotlight. There we go.
Spotlight. That's what we're calling these, yes.
The way we're going to structure these episodes, especially with some of these that aren't as well defined or as well developed, is we'll actually look at them kind of through the age of Warhammer, as well as through, like, we won't just talk about how they're placed in the 41st millennium, but we'll talk about how they were introduced in Rogue Trader and kind of like how they developed throughout the lifestyle, the life of lore and the life of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But before we jump into that, let's talk about a couple of the notable models that exist, things that you can go out and buy. And first on the list is Zolkath the Zote, who is a Forge World Blood Bowl model.
Wow.
Pretty cool looking.
How much is that, like in US Freedom Von Bucks?
I think he's in the 35 to 45 range. Oh. I think he might be a little bit more. The Forge World Blood Bowl standalone stuff is one of those, it's hard to find in anything other than like the LGSs that carry it. And a lot of times the LGSs have it for long enough that it's difficult to see. I'm sure if you ordered it from Forge World, it would be more expensive.
Oh yeah, of course.
But he's a very cool model. I believe Marky bought one.
Oh, he's neat. I like his armor.
Yeah, he's got a very, very cool look.
I like his little ear guards, like he's playing rugby.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So next up, we have the Archivist, who is from Blackstone Fortress. And this is the model that most people are probably familiar with. Yeah. This model came out recently as well.
I see he has like hooves, but like a toad hoof.
Yeah, they've got like rhino feet or elephant feet.
That is super interesting. You know, if we were just thinking about this, like compared to real world animals, it's got a little bit of everything, but definitely not same like evolutionary families, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Super interesting stuff.
And he's got the rebreather mask on.
Mm-hmm. He made it himself.
Yeah, and it goes down to his little... And that's not his mouth, which a lot of people like, oh, his mouth must be in there. His mouth is where a mouth would be. that's like the oxygen tank or whatever, because they kind of carry stuff differently.
Yep.
So the original Rogue Trader set, that's actually how far back these guys go.
Wow.
Came with three of the same lower bodies, but different upper bodies you could play with. So there was a Zote with a flamer and a power glove. Pretty iconic. You can find him around. Then there is a Zote who is holding a flesh borer in two hands. Then there is a Zote with a missile launcher.
I love that.
And then there is a Zote with twin flesh borers. So there's a Zote that has like the longer Rogue Trader era flesh borer. And then there's one that's like guns akimbo with flesh borers.
That's so dope. I love the way that this artist did the bone detail on the guns. Really enjoy that. Yeah.
Look really good. And then on the fantasy side, Warhammer Fantasy Battle 3rd edition, we had the Zote Warrior, who is a Zote with a double-handed axe. Then there is the Zote with club, that is just this Zote carrying a ridiculously massive club, which apparently I cannot find at the moment, even though I thought I had opened a picture of it. Sorry, those of you on Patreon or those of you who just joined Patreon. And then there was a Zote Wizard who is holding either a magic spell or a club in one hand and then like a orb or a globe in the other hand. That was it. I mean, those were the earliest models. And then, you know, the Zote kind of disappeared after second, third edition of Warhammer 40K and third, fourth edition of Warhammer Fantasy Battle. They kind of stopped being around.
Yeah, I think like in 40K, in some capacity, the Gene Stealer cults kind of take on some of those Zote things, but they are just fully not present at all in, you know, Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, to date, I think the Zote player for Blood Bowl is really new. So maybe that's the first indication. I think he came out last year. That weirdly dates us. I think he came out in like 2022.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, it'd be cool to see Zotes come to Age of Sigmar.
But like, who do you think they'd still be allied with? Wood Elves? Or do you think that enough has changed since, you know, Age of Sigmar, and like, you know, now that we're in like the post-apocalyptic fantasy setting, do you think that they would still pop up and be with the Wood Elves? Or do you think that they would, I don't know.
I think they'd still be with the Sylvaneth. And the reason that I think they'd still be with the Sylvaneth is the Sylvaneth have a bunch of like different gods, essentially.
Okay. That's right.
Like one of the Sylvaneth gods in Shaiish is a big deer. But he's like an internal, like the Sylvaneth definitely have all the cosmic horror things. It's like this creepy big deer thing that like stalks people down and eats them. I could definitely see the Zotes fitting in with that. Because, you know, and we'll get a little bit, we'll get into it here as we talk about their place in lore throughout the editions, but the Zotes were definitely like the deep forest protectors in the fantasy battle world. So I could definitely see them fitting in with the Sylvaneth. I could also see them fitting in with whatever Slan/Lizard Folk Seraphon angle they seem to be kind of angling towards, because a lot of the Seraphon stuff has started to get this this ancient alien style technology attached to them.
Yes, like all that Azerite stuff that they use.
Very much feels like they're angling towards the Seraphon breaking the barrier between 40K, and they probably never will, but it feels like they're getting close to breaking the barrier between 40K and AOS.
Yes, because that's exactly what I was about to say, is like, you know, back in the day in Warhammer Fantasy Battles and in Rogue Trader days, the lines between the franchises was a lot more blurred than it is now, and like some of the crossover events that would happen would just be utterly like mind shattering, you know, to these nerds if it happened today. But like, I think, yeah, if we're going to have like Zotes in AOS, I think if they were to ally with the Seraphon, Which, as a Seraphon player, I'd be like, hell yeah, give me the Zotes. I just feel like, you know, it would be enough to send kind of like that post-COVID Warhammer player into a bit of a coma, because that would be like an intense crossover event at this point.
Yeah, it'd be a little, then they would definitely be in both universes. One of the only reasons that Blood Bowl kind of gets away with it, we'll talk about later, but Blood Bowl kind of exists in its own continuity.
Yeah, it's like the Blood Bowl planet, kind of.
Yeah, it's
interesting. Vaguely based on the Mortal Realms, but like Blood Bowl and Dungeon Bowl is fully its own narrative.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it'd be in, I definitely think that Zotes, I want to see more Zotes stuff. I guess I guess that's the best way to put it. I definitely want to see more Zotes stuff, be it through, you know, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Zotes first appeared in 40K and Warhammer 40,000 Rogue Trader. They are detailed on page 202 in the Age of Aperium section. Warhammer 40,000 Rogue Trader was released in 1987. That's an important date. In Rogue Trader, Zotes are described as being the most commonly encountered of all Tyranid slave species. It's suggested that most Tyranids have a hard time being on a planet for too long, as they are engineered to live in space. Their spindly original designs don't really allow Tyranids to like enjoy atmosphere or gravity. I really like the original Tyranid art too. I know that I know that can be an unpopular opinion.
They're goofy, but
they're very weird looking, but they're kind of like creepy. I mean, that they're creepy alien now, but they were kind of creepy like alien,
fleshy and gross back in their old sculpts in a way that they're just not now.
Yeah, they're not quite there. I realize that they kind of also look silly, but they were creepy. They're creepy interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The Zotes are different, seemingly created specifically for combat on planetary surfaces, being stocky and evolved or engineered for atmospheric fighting on a wide range of different planets. Zotes share the centauroid shape of most Tyranids at the time. Pretty much at the time, all Tyranids had four hooved legs. Well, no, I take that back. At the time, Tyranid warriors, which are now what we would look at as like Hormigaunts and Termagaunts, had two forearms that could hold weapons. Then they had two hooved feet, and then they had two like gorilla arms or monkey arms.
Mm-hmm.
But Tyranids kind of all followed the same almost centaur-like body for a long time. Zotes were also described as being able to eat anything, but their meal generally consisted of three reconstituted protein-based woven bricks called Zote bricks.
Oh my God.
Which has survived. That is still part of lore. Population-wise, Zotes are extremely common in Tyranid hive fleets at the time. They were often equal in numbers to the Tyranids themselves. So if a hive fleet had 50,000 Tyranids, there would be 50,000 Zotes. Even back in the Rogue Trader days, Zotes, while being a slave race, still occupied several more specialized and important roles within the hive fleets. Rebellion was uncommon, as Tyranids secrete a special slave pheromone which overrode the Zotes' desire for independence.
Oh my God.
And that's one of the things that almost kind of makes me think there's a lot of things in the Zote like description that makes me think they're another alien race that was enslaved.
Yeah.
Maybe the Tyranids. Oh shit. Tinfoil hat moment. Maybe the Zotes made the Tyranids.
Oh fuck.
And it got out of control.
Yeah, but
because Tyranids are definitely a bioweapon.
Tyranids are a bioweapon. And that's the thing, is the Zotes have this insane sort of like resiliency and adaptability. Did they just simply make something more resilient, more powerful, and more adaptable?
Yeah. And why would every Tyranid, no matter its rank or status, need to secrete a slave hormone to keep Zotes in control if Zotes were part of the hive mind?
Yeah, agreed.
Tinfoil hat.
Mysteries.
Yeah, right. We need Marky with his soundboard. However, those that do escape often become extremely powerful psychers, as Zotes are naturally psychic, though the same hormone that makes them subservient also dulls any of their psychic abilities. The most common way for a Zote to become independent during this era and even into current or semi-current 40K era was when they're cut off from a fleet or the hive mind. So a splinter fleet gets too small to have a good connection to the hive mind, and the Zotes basically don't, they're not in control. As soon as there aren't enough synapse creatures around, the Zotes basically can do whatever they want. And that happens a lot. There are a lot of times in lore where a fleet gets that cut off.
So what does happen when the Zotes become independent and they can start, like, they're quite intelligent creatures. So, like, what happens at this point?
I mean, human sacrifices, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Okay. So we don't want this to happen.
I had to throw a callback to Ghostbusters in. I'm sorry. They're very, very interested in alien technology. They like mm-hmm. collecting things, and they're hyper intelligent. So a lot of times they get their, you know, they have like a 50% chance of becoming psychic, but they're all pretty much just driven to like collect weird technology. So they kind of start pirating around the universe, I guess, is like the best way to look at it.
Yeah. That's what I do.
Right. Right. Same situation. I mean, like, big brain move, right? Just become a pirate.
Yeah. Huge brain move. Become a pirate. Put together yourself a cool flag. That's what I do.
It's like Black Sails, where they have the flag making contest, but it's Zotes instead.
Yes, just like that.
So in my best late night QVC voice I can possibly muster. But wait, there's more. As we mentioned up top, Zotes also appear in Warhammer Fantasy Battle 3rd Edition. However, we don't have a 3rd Edition book, so forgive me for not having more information on the pages or the specific splat they're in. My Warhammer Fantasy Battle collection is unfortunately restricted to 7th and 8th edition and Age of Sigmar at the moment. Mm. I have the Rogue Trader book, but yeah, this is a little outside my wheelhouse. But just to kind of tie everything into a bow, Warhammer Fantasy Battle 3rd Edition was also released in 1987. As Chalk and I have actually talked about in our Warhammer Origins series, there was a lot more, and you just mentioned this too, there used to be a lot more crossover back in the infancy of Warhammer 40K. In fact, Chaos Marines being a thing that could be summoned into a fantasy battle tabletop game, as well as entire units of fantasy creatures just being able to show up randomly during a Rogue Trader game. And Rogue Trader was played a lot more like a fantasy role-playing tabletop game with miniatures and a lot less like a head-to-head battle. There was a game master and there were a couple of different things. But this is definitely the time and the entire reason that Warhammer 40K exists is because Games Workshop was being very, very successful at selling Lord of the Rings and Dungeons & Dragons miniatures and accessories. And that led to a fantasy historical war game, Warhammer Fantasy Battle. And then basically G-Dub was like, well, for lack of a better way to put it, how do we print more money? And somebody was like, well, let's make a space version. So at this time in the Rogue Trader era, it was more about selling more miniatures than it was about having a distinct universe.
So this is just like all of Yu-Gi-Oh, which is an anime to sell card game.
Which is based on Magic the Gathering. Yes. Very similar. Very similar. And that's one of the reasons why this comes up a lot. It's kind of a hot button Warhammer thing, and it probably will be until there's an official solve from the company. But a lot of times people bring up the fact that there aren't female space marines, but there used to be female space marine models. And that also harkens back to this era, because in the Rogue Trader era, space marine was a title given to soldiers that wore a specific type of power armor, not like the Legion Astartes existed. That was a name, but they were just a legion. Like the French Foreign Legion is just a legion.
So there were like legions of things that were not Astartes.
Right. Yes.
Okay. I see.
They were essentially the humans that could afford power armor, which is why if you go back and find that old sales sheet, which is, it's pretty easy to find, there is Space Warrior Woman like Jeb and Space Warrior Woman Raquel or whatever. Like those are the, like there's named women in space marine power armor. And the reason that went away in second edition wasn't because the company decided that female space marines couldn't exist. It was literally a, these models don't sell. And at the end of the day, they're a model company, and they transitioned that into the metal Sisters of Battle.
Yeah.
Which did do okay. And then when the resurgence and interest in the old metal Sisters of Battle, Sisters of Battle units happened in like 6th, 7th edition, that's when they decided to make Sisters of Battle a plastic range. Because again, like a lot of the decisions that are being made by the company have to do with what's popular and what sells.
Yes.
They're not, you know, that because that's how companies work.
Yeah, that's why there's only one girl Bionicle.
That's why, yeah. That's why Coke Zero exists. Like, it's like one of those things. Like, it's just, yeah.
Coke Zero is just repackaged. Diet Coke is the same thing. Exact same thing functionally.
How dare you?
No, this is like a fact. They realized that Diet Coke didn't appeal to men because it was like, oh, Diet Coke's for girls. Diet Coke's a pussy beverage.
As I drink my Coke Zero.
Yeah, because Coke Zero is exactly the same thing as Diet Coke. It's just rebranded and repackaged with like the black packaging, so it's more like manly. Yep. So it's just man Diet Coke.
Well, and now it's just Coca-Cola Red. The logo's black. I think on normal Coca-Cola, the logo is silver.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the color of the can. But so the interesting thing, not that this is either here nor there, but the whole reason that I drink Coke Zero is I was at a friend's house and they had Coke Zero and I was like, this isn't that bad. And then I kind of knew that I was getting to the time in my life where I should stop drinking as much sugar as I drank. Mm-hmm. So I cut a lot of sugar out and that's why I went with Coke Zero. And now, like, I've even been places and people have given me a normal Coke or a normal Diet Coke, and I swear there is a taste difference. I don't know what it is, but I swear there is a taste difference.
There's not. I am all about the Spindrift. It's just seltzer water with some fruit juice in it.
I think we should get sponsored by Hint, because I keep, there's a lot of podcasts that get sponsored by Hint Water, so hit us up, Hint. Plug. Yeah. Or Coke. Or honestly, Coke. I mean, like, we'll take a Coke sponsorship.
Oh, yeah. Too. You're on our Old Hammer podcast. Full-on Coca-Cola as Coca-Cola sponsoring us.
We'll totally drink whatever we're drinking on screen out of Coca-Cola cans.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. Or truly, or White Claw, hit me up, too. I mean, I am not above admitting I get white girl, White Claw wasted sometimes. It's fine.
Oh my God.
Rosé all day. It's just, it happens every once in a while. Like, what are you going to do? All right. So back to Zotes. So Zotes in the old world of Warhammer were extremely rare, and many theorized that their numbers were ever dwindling, suggesting that they were a dying race. When they were encountered, though, it was in the deep forests, and often they were seen either dealing with or in alliance with wood elves. While they seemed well-intentioned, they are also extreme isolationists. Most of the time when they are encountered, it was when their territory or homes were being threatened. They are also peerless wizards, at least in the eyes of the common folk who spoke of them. This is partially true, as they were inherently magical creatures, and the older they grew, the more their powers and wisdom increased with them, which I thought was kind of a cool little thing. So you may not be good when you're a baby Zote, but when you're an elder Zote, you got the wizard chops. They also seem to have opposed pretty greatly any forces of chaos or any of the other evils of the old world, which I thought was pretty neat. They don't have their own agenda. Their agenda is get out my swamp. And then their second agenda is fuck chaos. I just realized they're the Shreks.
They're the old men, which is perfect because like the Seraphon are a very ancient race. They're also magical lizard people. I think that, yeah, it would blow the mind of like a lockdown hobbyist if the Zotes showed up the Seraphon. But I think that's how they should do it. Like, you know, Lord Croak's been dead forever and they've just kind of been weekend at Bernie-ing his corpse puppet around. Someday this whole system is going to collapse. It's true, though. They're like fully Did I say Five Nights at Bernie's? I'm thinking of Five Nights at Freddy's and Weekend at Bernie's. I'm thinking of Weekend at Bernie's.
I heard Weekend at Bernie's. You may have said Five Nights at Bernie's, but
I was thinking Five Nights at Freddy's in my head and then saying Weekend at Bernie's. It all came out a little wonk. But anyways, it was a very like Weekend at Bernie's, like they just sort of inflate him and just kind of let him like rigor mortis his way through some spells.
G-Dub, since I know you listen to the podcast and take everything that we say and then release it like a couple of months later, because it's happened too many times not to be true. I refuse to believe that it's the cyclical nature of the hobby and we've just been lucky. It's you listen to the podcast. The next model I want to see is two Zotes puppeting Lord Croak.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly what it is. It's like, hello. And then they make him they make him cast a spell. It's perfect.
Oh my god. Hey Marky, welcome. Late introduction to Marky, everybody.
Yep, sorry. Work. It's a thing. Who would have thought?
We're talking Zotes. We've given him a whole episode.
That's always fun. I only know of two Zotes, and there's one in the 40K with like the belly thing. He's got like the belly.
The Archivist.
Is that what it's called? It's got a name. And then there's the Blood Bowl Zote, which Tom loves to run.
Zolkath the Zote.
Yeah, I think his special ability is, I'm sorry, are you a Zote?
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it like stuns the other character, something along those lines.
That's super cool. So Zotes also appeared in the Warhammer Total War game series. Their lore here pretty much follows the old world lore. They are a race onto themselves. However, in this case, it's suggested that they might be some splinter of the Lizardmen race or some other early creation of the Slann priesthood. Once again, they are instinctual magic users. However, there's a lot more depth given. A Zote might never prove as versatile as a wizard or an elf, but their innate control over magic surpasses even the most learned of high elf mages. So they might not be able to like sling a fireball, mend your shoes, cure some water, and summon a horse. But when they do cast fireball, everything over there is definitely gone forever.
Okay, so more of a DPS than one would say, like the mesmeric type of, they're more of a red mage than like a white mage kind of thing.
I think it's a little bit more like if you look at sorcerers and wizards from a D&D perspective, but they're sorcerer spell. They're a sorcerer with meta magic at level one versus a wizard. They're not as versatile as a wizard, but they're a lot more dependable and a lot better at what they do. It's just their focus is a lot slimmer.
Those things know they're magic. More
like a like a World of Warcraft warlock, if we're thinking like, you know, Lich King era World of Warcraft, which is kind of when I played.
Yeah, that you like.
You might have already covered this, but are they of any kind of relation to the, like, I think it's the Slann or the Lizardmen?
So they suggest in the Warhammer Total War game series that they're related to either the Lizardmen or the Slann, or they were made by the Slann priesthood. But in both 40K and Warhammer Fantasy, they have psychic and magic powers like innately. Like it's just part of them.
Yeah, I know they had like some kind of telekinesis or something along those lines in 40K, right? Like they speak with their minds almost.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. So once again, in the Total War game series, they are pretty much never seen unless it's in the deep woods. And even when they are threatened directly, they often use their magic to cause the roots of trees and vines from the deep forest to entangle and strangle out their enemies, further protecting them from detection. So you wander into their glade or you wander into threatening their homes and like,
and it's evil dead all over again.
Yeah. The evil dead all, you never see one of them. They just evil dead all your guys. That's a good way to put it. So when they are seen, it's super rare. On top of that, even the rumor of a single Zote being in a particular area of the forest will cause orcs and other marauders to completely avoid it. So orcs will learn that a Zote lives in an area and they just won't go into the forest.
That's just Zote propaganda.
So probably can't, allegedly. They were most commonly summoned when the great Eldritch storms erupted across the surface of the world that was, where it became possible to bind a Zote into your service. So I believe in the Warhammer Total War 2, there's a time where a bunch of like big warp storms basically erupt across the planet. And that's the point in the game where the wild elves, or the wood elves, not the wild elves, can start to summon them. And they I believe they come in a set of four, and they're actually surrounded in like a magic, like storm system, like miniature storms, like a tornado. That's what I was thinking. Magic tornado. Zotes also appear in the first edition of the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game. Most of the information, again, is the same, aside from the mention of the fact that the lizard men greatly fear them. That's the addition in the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game. Their language is also described as being common. So all Zotes across the entire planet speak the same language. It's not regionally locked. Okay. And their tongue is grinding and rumbling. But they also natively speak Elven and can choose to natively speak several of the Druidic languages.
So like when they're saying hi, they like twerk on you? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yes.
The grinding language.
Yes.
I think it's more like...
grinding sound like teeth?
Yeah.
He had the face of a granite wall and the voice of a landslide. I think it's supposed to be that.
Yeah. The guttural rumbling.
No twerking then.
No twerking. Well, I mean, unless you pay out a lot
of
crowns, then you get the crown.
What a shame.
If you make it rain, they'll twerk. So the Enigma of Gyren was a wood elf regiment of renown unit. Should storms of magic raise across the uncharted woodlands, it may be a portent that monstrous and sinister things dwell within. This was a unit of four, if I recall correctly, and it can be taken with the Wood Elf Regiment of Renown in 3rd Edition Fantasy Battle. There was also a single Wizard Zote model that could be taken in the Wood Elf line. They came equipped with a Sky Stave, and then we mentioned the other models up top. So those are the models that you could play in 3rd Edition Fantasy Battle.
Is there a reason they call it a stave and not a stab, besides the spelling?
Don't know. That is a good question.
Because I've heard stave a lot.
Easier to copyright or something.
Easier to cut. Yeah, it sounds GW-like.
It's GW.
Yeah. A stave is a vertical wooden post or plank in a building or other structure. It is also another term used for staff. I think.
But pronounced stave.
I think in the D&D context, because staves are in D&D as well, I think a stave is like a single use or single spell staff.
I think it's like a two-handed versus one-handed weapon.
Oh, maybe. I like that. Okay, I like that.
It's a wand versus like a rod.
Yes.
Or staff.
Yeah. If you're thinking like in
all of these
terms.
All of these words that mean the same thing are really close to the same thing. But I know that lots of RPGs use stave and staff. So yeah, that's a good question, Marky. I don't know.
You're just buttering me up. That's a horrible question.
No, I didn't have an answer, so that's a good question. All right, so last but not least, still kind of attached to the Warhammer Fantasy battle scenario, we have Zolkath the Zote, who is a Zote blocker, and he initially played Blood Bowl for the Lalorian Paladins, but he is now a free agent for the Amazons, Lizardmen, and Wood Elf teams. He is notable as the first Zote to ever play Blood Bowl. He played with the Paladins starting in 2466 IC. He vanished for a bit of time after that before coming back in 2492 to help the Paladins win the Springleaf Cup. He is extremely private and only offers to play for teams that can actually figure out where he lives and find him. So you might be wondering, and we kind of teased it out earlier, how does Blood Bowl factor into all of this? So Blood Bowl technically exists, much like Warhammer Total War, in an alternate continuity from Warhammer Fantasy Battle, although there is a lot of crossover with players, ideas, and teams. As a note, in the common Warhammer Fantasy Battle canon, in the Middenland, there is a sport called Midden Ball, which is pretty much Blood Bowl.
I like our Ice World Monster Truck Racing better, though. I think that's a far better sport.
Oh yeah, Marky, new podcast lore. The glacial,
what do we call it?
The glacial gauntlet is essentially Gaslands, Mad Max, but on the ice.
Yes.
So it was Zambonis, is what you're telling me?
It's twisted. Well, it's yes.
Twisted metal
with Zambonis.
Yes, it's twisted metal. Yeah. 100%. That's exactly what it is.
At Zamboni speed, too. Like when Deadpool's riding the Zamboni at the guy. Yeah. You got about 15 minutes or whatever.
Dude's running out of breath between yelling.
Oh, my God.
So it's in space?
Yep. It is time for the main event. You can't.
Space.
You have to say it like Pigs in Space from The Muppets, though. Do you not know Pigs in Space?
Is this like a very big like blind spot in my Muppet lore knowledge?
Marky, do you know Pigs in Space?
I feel like you're about to unlock an old memory of mine.
All right, so I'm going to unlock a core memory, hopefully in both of you. So back in the day in The Muppet Show, they had a segment that was Miss Piggy and a bunch of the other pig Muppets. And it was a Star Trek original series like parody. Okay. Called Pigs in Space. And the way that they did it was Pigs in Space. So, you know, you got to do Zoats in Space. I feel that's the way you have to announce them.
You have to.
Out of our 8 listeners, probably one of those is old enough to get that joke. And it's Chalk.
Out of our 8 listeners, excuse me, sir, we have at least 18 12. Listeners. So getting back to the Warhammer 40K Zoats, they were reintroduced in 1992 White Dwarf, along with a re-release of the classic model line that we talked about up top, but things had started to change for the Tyranids as a whole with the release of Advanced Space Crusade, which pitted Space Marines in a suicide mission against Tyranid warriors. And this is kind of the start that you mentioned. This is where the idea of Space Marines versus Gene Stealers originated, essentially.
Ah, yes.
This included more lore, which moved the Zoats from foot soldiers of the Tyranids to something more intelligent and capable of communication. This is the area where most Tyranid stuff turned into bottomless, stomached eating machines, which positioned the Zoats to become something between diplomat, concierge, and herald of the hive mind's coming. Then they went silent, aside from a few small lore bits, including a mention in the 2005 Tyranid Codex, which mentioned a centauroid race that traveled with Hive Fleet Colossus and could communicate telepathically. Then in 2012, new art appeared of the Zoats, Hrud, and Terrillian dog soldiers. This time, we got the more muscled out and power-fisted combat monster we all picture nowadays. There was also mention at this point that the Zoats had finally given their old Tyranid masters the slip, but they truly returned with the release of Blackstone Fortress and its expansions, which started in 2008. And this is where we got our new Zodi boy, the Archivist.
Oh, he's so bite cool. Ace.
Yeah.
He's a very cool model.
Ever seen the inside of a Zoat before?
You're gonna. And he eats you.
Oh.
Is that my. How that conversation? Wow. That got oddly dark and sexual at the same. Marky must be on the podcast.
That's how Kyle would talk to girls at the store about the prospect of it.
Have you ever had a little Zoat in you?
Do you want to?
As they're twerking on you in their language.
Oh my god.
That's the nails.
Mm-hmm. So Zoats in the post 41st millennium. Zoats have kept a lot of their original flavor, being seen and used by the hive mind as diplomats, since they were more capable than the rest of the more animalistic Tyranid species. It's still unclear if they were bioengineered or seemingly enslaved by the Tyranids, although it is almost certain that even if they were just seen as advantageous and then enslaved, the Tyranids have been dabbling in tweaking their genetics the entire time. Marky, Emmy and I also had a tinfoil hat moment where I suggested that maybe the Zotes made the Tyranids and the Tyranids got out of control.
Yeah, that was a mistake. Like, this thing would make a good pet.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite tinfoil hat theory I've ever come up with.
Like, this thing would make a good pet.
yeah. Hey, we need to make. I'm thinking more along the idea behind the Zerg and the Protoss in StarCraft is a forerunner race, which I can't remember the name of, but essentially the old ones in the Star Trek universe made the Zerg because they needed a bioweapon, and the Zerg got out of control. So then they made the Protoss to deal with the Zerg. So in my mind, the Zotes create the Tyranids as a bioweapon to deal with some enemy, and the Tyranids are really effective, but the Hive Mind grows as a consequence of that, and then the Hive Mind enslaves its former masters. And that's the reason that Zotes, while being a Tyranid race, in air quotes, are so different from the Tyranids. It makes too much sense. It honestly makes too much sense.
Yeah, and that's probably why they, like, fucked off, because they're like, oh, I'm not taking the fall for this. Yeah, they just existed. I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, I'm outie.
Yeah, I'm like, I ain't no scapegoat.
I ain't no snitch.
That's why you got all those Tyranids that just twerk all over you, speaking my language.
That's right. So again, this all kind of gets back to the fact that they were most likely an ancient alien species that were one of the first enslaved and then assimilated by the Tyranids. They were used by the Hive Mind to scout out new species and determine how useful any given species' genome would be for assimilation by the Hive Mind. So Zotes would be sent ahead, and they would basically diplomatically work within a race to essentially figure out whether or not that race was worth eating or assimilating. Mm-hmm. Do we want their genetics, or are they just biomass?
And if they didn't like you, they'd be like, oh yeah, by the way, there's a splinter fleet on the way. Later.
Yep. Zotes are capable of comprehending an astonishing amount of information about other species' languages and psychology in an incredibly short amount of time, easily assimilating vast amounts of data that they can use to make predictions about that species much easier. They are also able to read the subtlest of facial and body language cues, making them extremely charismatic. A mastery of this skill even giving them a better understanding of how to share information among a native population than those who have been born to it. So they are the translator who shows up and can outspeak your elder in minutes.
And wow. Who does that sound like? The Tyranids. Coincidence? I think not.
Checkmate, yes.
6 foot tall, 8 foot long reptilian overlords named the Zotes. Ancient aliens.
Next Tyranid release, Zotes.
The few Zotes who could escape the Hive Mind had enough independence in their design to function as fully independent agents, something which further separates them from other Synapse bioforms, who might just collect in great enough masses again and form a new splinter of the Hive Mind. Just like in the Rogue Trader era, the Tyranids still produce a hormone that blocks the Zotes' access to their free will and their natural psychic abilities. By the 41st millennium, it seemed that the Zotes were no longer being created by the Hive fleets, and they vanished from Imperial record for generations. This all changed later in Era Indominus, when Zotes were spotted aboard the 7th Blackstone Fortress. The Imperium's limited interactions with Zotes has normally been in the observation of single nomadic examples, although they have also been encountered in small groups. So when the Imperium has seen them, there's one dude, not armies.
Oh, interesting.
Now let's ask the real question here. How many toes are we talking? They got 4 legs, right?
They got 3 toes on each leg, so that is a total of 12.
12 toes. It's not enough. I don't know. Superior? I think not.
Wait, they've got a back toe too, so they've got 4 per.
Okay.
So 16 toes.
Okay.
Does that change it?
They do well.
They've come up in your estimation.
Yeah, they do well.
Didn't realize you were a foot guy.
It's a thing that has followed the podcast since day one.
Okay.
Yeah. The slap calf heard around the internet.
I'm really not. I really don't understand, like, the...
We have no idea how it happened.
I heard that there's, like, some kind of connection between, like, in your brain between like the like sensual feelings and your feet. And like sometimes people get that like connection very close. So they have like some kind of a reaction to feet. I don't have that, but you know, hey, I suck toes, so it was on the
I don't have that, but hey, I suck toes. Kind of like it crosses a wire there, but
first episode of Chappelle's Show, it was a thing. What was the name of the skit? It was the one where they're trying to copy like not Kinko's. They're copying Kinko's.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And they're trying to talk shit like, oh yeah, you know that. Like, we don't give a shit about our customers.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. So that's where it all came from. So
Chappelle's Show.
So this is what happened, Emmy. Some podcast deep lore. Our first stream. This is before the podcast was a thing. Our first stream.
The calf slap heard across the world.
That was our first stream after the podcast was a thing. But yes, that also happened. But the first stream that we ever did was on YouTube. It was before we were Twitch streaming, and Marky told a toe joke. And for whatever reason, enough people from that proto Under the Hive of Madness have continued to be part of our community since that day. So toes are just a thing in the community. However, as Marky just brought up, our first official Under the Hive of Madness stream after within our first month of podcasting, somebody gave us 15,000 bits. They will remain nameless, but somebody gave us 1,500 bits. If I were to show my toes on screen, and being
it was horrible,
being who I am
for life,
I decided to strip tease it. So I rolled up.
I ain't no punk bitch.
So I rolled up. I slowly rolled up my jeans and I slapped my calf. And like, you know, like dude, you know, because
meaty, it was satisfying.
It was nice. Slap, no, and like everybody lost it for like five minutes. God. None of us could breathe. We were laughing so hard.
Yeah, I'm not into guys, but man, Ryan made me question my sexuality that day when he slapped his calf. I was like, dear God, that man. Oh my God.
So when Mark's asked that question and they're like, so are you sexually active? Marky says, yes. I say, are you interested in women or men? Marky goes, women. And the doctor goes, okay, so you're heterosexual. What percentage? And Marky goes, God, that calf slap.
Questionable.
98, 96.
If I had to give it a number. 25%. If I had to give it a number. Yeah, I suck toes just like my battle cry. Whenever I'm about to throw a bunch of dice for like all my orcs, I'm like, hell yeah, I suck toes. And then I throw all my doc on the table. And it's just.
My God.
And the orcs just do well, so I just keep doing it. I don't know.
This is the Howard Stern of Warhammer 40K podcasts, folks.
Can you imagine how
Coke Zero?
Imagine how amazing like orc toes might be. Like they don't wear a lot of shoes. Like some of them are barefoot. I think on the Ruck-a-Truck Squig Buggy, one of them is missing a pinky toe, and it's like my favorite model. His guts out. He's got like a double barrel shotgun. He's got like a rod on his back. It's hilarious. He's missing his toe.
And he's missing his little binky.
Yeah.
Although they started out as a slave race, Zotes still often serve important roles throughout the Tyranid Hive fleets, just like in the Rogue Trader era. And the Hive Mind made sure to subtly direct their evolution, making all of them formidable warriors. Driven forward by four powerful legs, a charging Zote becomes a living battering ram. Their speed and momentum. Toes. That's right. Their speed and momentum. There's 16 speed bike right there. Their speed and momentum carrying them forward even after they've been mortally wounded. Their powerful muscles could crush those run over by their legs, and even as they tore others limb from limb in hand-to-hand combat. Not to mention their ability to use weapons with their forearms and dexterous hands. Like other examples from the Tyranid race, some Zotes became refugees of failing splinter fleets or completely abandoned by the full strength of the hive mind, these Zotes regained their independence and their natural psychic abilities came flooding back to them. Zote communities do exist, although they are very often widely dispersed, which is kind of part of that reason that they seem to be singular.
Right.
There is a community. Yeah, but it's just that they have really big territories, essentially.
Mm-hmm. You think they can stand up on their hind legs and like goro you? Like they hold you with... They hold your arms.
I don't think they can goro you, but I bet they can like horse trample you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when horses rear and then like, yeah, like smack you with their front feet, which is just as bad.
If I had to choose a way to go, I mean, it ain't bad.
Yeah.
You want to go by toes. Got it.
If it was an option.
Some Zotes find employment across the galaxy as mercenaries. Most often they work with Eldari Corsairs. For their disdain of orcs and their distrust for humans often align them more closely with the Eldari than any other race. But they still will fight for the highest bidder pretty much anytime a higher bidder comes up. Mm. And this is kind of where I want to know. So I have an idea of how I would run Zotes as an army, as a 40K faction. But I want to know, Emmy, how you would run them. And Marky, if you've got an idea, let us know too. But like Emmy, let's start with you. Well, how would you run them? Would you run them like, would you run a full Zote army like Custodes? Just small unit count, all Zotes?
I would run it as some type of battalion or detachment. Like, here's my little Zote unit. Have them, you know, doing some mind control and being like little space cops, you know, while my Tyranids go in while everything else is nice and distracted and then go eat it.
So you'd still run them with Tyranids, basically?
I'd still run them with Nids, yes. And I would paint them up like Paw Patrol uniforms.
Okay, there you go. per my email,
I would be painting them up with Paw Patrol uniforms. Yes.
That's pretty awesome. Marky, do you have any ideas yet, or you want to? So
they have like cybernetic enhancements, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So like you remember, I think it was the second Mortal Kombat movie. They had, I think his name's Sentaro, and it looked like Machete from,
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So, I'd run them as like a foot slogging, because they're essentially like mounted units, right?
Right. They have a lot of toes. You got to run them as.
I'm trying not to devolve the conversation. I know this is your episode, Emmy. So I'm trying not to make it horrible, even though I've already done that. So I'm trying to bring it back. Trying to be serious. You can't keep distracting me with the amount of
toes
power they have. Yeah, I just trample the shit out of my enemy. So it'd be a big foot slogging, almost kind of like you were saying, Custodes, because they're pretty elite in themselves, right?
Yeah,
and they have psychic powers, a lot of cybernetic enhancements. Yeah, that's the guy right there. You got to get if you, for $369, you can join our Patreon and see the beautiful images that Ryan is pulling up right now. You got to pull up the one from the movie, though. The guy looked awesome. I love the guy, wherever he was. I got to look up who the actor was. But he looked like Machete from, what the hell is the name of the movie? Machete's been in all, he literally has a movie named Machete, but the particular one.
Danny Trejo.
Danny Trejo, thank you. Yeah, Trejo's Tacos, not a bad place. Yeah, dude, he looks sick. I'd run him like that. I mean, I don't know what kind of shooting they have. It sounds like they'd be more of a melee/psychic-based army, almost like Grey Knights.
Something like
that. Probably. Yeah, probably Grey Knights.
Yeah, yeah.
Not as maneuverable, mobile, I guess, in the sense of teleporting around. I mean, I'm sure they got four legs. I'm sure they get around, right?
So, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, I'd run them like that, just like a melee bash, foot-slogging army. I think that'd be pretty dope. Yeah, I mean, who doesn't want to die that way, right? Your enemy can't be mad at you.
Exactly.
Like, I'm doing you a favor, man. Come on.
Was Mortal Kombat 2 Annihilation? Was that what it was?
I believe so, yeah.
All right, so now you got me interested. So now I'm trying to figure out who
have
played.
Have you not seen it?
I have, but it has been a long time.
Same, yeah. I remember back when the first Mortal Kombat came out and me and my brother watched it. We were kids. I'm pretty sure I've said this on the podcast before. If not on the podcast, possibly on stream, but... whenever the theme song would play in the beginning of the movie, me and my brother would beat the living shit out of each other to the theme song. And nice. Then when it finally came off, we'd like settle down and watch the movie. But it was you know, one of those core memories of me and my brother always beating the crap out of each other whenever we watched Mortal Kombat.
I used to get really fired up by the Ninja Turtles movies, apparently. And me and my friends would beat each other up during the Ninja Turtle fight scenes. The Dude. Old Ninja Turtles movies with the suits.
Especially, like, the one with the rave. Like, the go ninja with the... Oh, what was his name?
Vanilla Ice.
Vanilla Ice, yeah. I was going to say the other Eminem guy. the guy that's not Eminem.
Whoa.
With Vanilla Ice.
M, if you're listening to the podcast, Marky apologizes.
I'm sure he's really big in 40K.
Oh, yeah. You know? Marshall Mathers is playing in the 8 Mile trailer park. Yeah.
He's like he's like the yin to the yang of Henry Cavill.
Yep, right? Oh, you know?
Yeah.
It could happen. Right? It could happen.
Post Malone plays Magic. There's that one rapper with the four pet owls. Like, Eminem could be doing Warhammer
40K content, right?
There's a rapper with four pet owls?
Let me Google the name of the rapper. But he's like a famous rapper with four pet owls.
Parappa is probably the guy.
As in Parappa, the rap, big boy.
He sent me a TikTok about it today. Yeah.
Tell me, it's Parappa. That's the guy.
No, it's big boy from fucking Outkast.
Yes, big boy from Outkast. That's right. He has four owls. And two of the owls, like... I
was close.
Yeah, Drew sent me this TikTok today, and like he takes two of the owls with him to the studio sometimes, and they just hang out with him in there.
That's very like Prince vibes, right?
It is very Prince vibes.
Yeah, like Prince just kind of goes around and does what he wants. Like, you know, why don't you purify yourselves in the waters of Lake Minnetonka? Like, would you like some flapjacks?
The game.
Oh my blouses. God. He just has an aura about him, you know?
I loved all the Prince skits from Dave Chappelle.
So good.
So fucking good. All right, so I'm going to answer the question now. So after reading all of the Zote lore and getting a little bit more into how they play in 40K, I would run a Zote pirate army. So okay. I would run very few Zotes, like maybe four or five Zotes in the entire army, but I would run all Eldari Corsairs.
Oh. Nice. I like
so
that.
So all of my Zotes would be the leaders. They would be like the aligned leaders with the Eldari Corsair force.
Oh, that's dope. Yeah.
It'd be cool. It would be a lot of converting though, because you'd have to go. I mean, there's only one Zote model. There's only two Zote models, modern Zote models.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that gives you enough that you can kind of play around with it. It'd be interesting. It'd be really fun. It'd be a fun challenge. But
what about like Zotes on chariots or Zotes on like Zotes on something else, right? Like
a Zote skimmer or something?
Well, like a Zotes riding some kind of other large beast.
Zote riders?
Yeah, Zote riders.
What is this like? Space wolves riding wolves? What are you talking about, Mark?
Exactly. Zoteception right now. Zote riding Zotes into battle.
Oh, man. The Zote cavalry. That's the other thing I thought about when you were talking about what you might do, Marky, was the other thing that you could use as a base would be the Attilan. They're not the Attilan.
Like the Gargantuan Squidos.
Oh, that'd be dope, too. But no, the Imperial Guard unit that rides horses, the cavalry unit, I cannot.
The Rough Riders?
Rough Riders, thank you. That would be another, if you got some Rough Riders and then maybe some...
That poor horse, dude. What's, there's that one game, Elden Ring. I forgot who the boss was, but it's essentially a guy that master, I'm going to butcher this, and people who play Elden Ring are going to be like, Marky, don't ever come back to the podcast ever again. but there's this guy who like mastered the art of like gravity, essentially, something along those lines. And he grew older and like larger, and his horse stayed the same. He was like a general or something. I'm butchering this, by the way. And the horse is the same size, but this guy is like the size of a 4-story building. And he rides this horse around in battle. And the poor horse, dude, it's like lanky and like crawling around. And he's got this big dude riding him. It was an interesting boss battle for sure.
I'm going to have to, the more I hear about Elden Ring, the more I realize I need to play it.
Yeah. You should probably look up Elden Ring guy with small horse. And that's probably what my Zotes are going to look like. My Zote cavalry is what I mean.
Well, I was thinking like to use the Rough Rider cavalry models, and then like the
upper, not the Zotes riding them.
The upper body would be a Saurus warrior.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
that's ridiculous.
did you?
That's ridiculous. That is straight up ridiculous. Is that really what that boss battle looks like?
Yep, 100%.
I love that.
That's great. That's an amazing fight.
That's pretty fun. It's ridiculous, but it's fun. All right. So first contact made with the Imperium. In the late 38th millennium, a species assumed to be the Zotes made contact with the Imperium. A Tyranid hive fleet, now named Hive Fleet Colossus, comprised of a centauroid alien race calling themselves the Colossi, attempted to enter Imperial space from the Eastern Fringe. They claimed to be fleeing from the oppression of an unknown Xenos race. It's clear now that the Zotes may not have revealed their true intentions or their real masters at this time. It is possible that as the Hive fleets evolved, the Zotes had become less useful to the Hive mind, and at this point in the 38th millennium, the Zotes had staged a rebellion. The rebellion was crushed, but the surviving Zotes fled ahead of the main Hive fleet and reached the Imperium first. This is when they found themselves trapped between their former masters and the Imperium, leading to a conflict with the latter. So Hive Fleet Colossus, or the Colossi, were Zotes on Hive Fleet ships or on Hive ships that were fleeing from a failed rebellion. Or that's one of the theories. The Colossi were unique for their telepathic communication and use of Tyranid biomorph weaponry, even though it caused them great pain. They were designated as Xenos Horribilis by the Senatorium Imperialis in the early 39th millennium due to their attempt to settle into Imperial space and the contact that was made between them and other alien races. The Colossi fleet was reportedly destroyed above the world of Zoroastra, but rumors suggest it may have returned in 897.M41. The Space Wolf chapter of Astartes engaged the forces of High Fleet Colossus during attack on the world of Thoraxis. As the Tyranids became more common in the galaxy, Zote sightings started to decrease. A singular Zote was encountered by the Imperial Fist Space Marines during the Second Tyrannic War in 993.M41. The Zote initially tried to deceive the Space Marines into following the Hive Mind through singing its high praises, but then attacked them when its deception failed and was subsequently killed by the Space Marines. While there is not that much detail, it's obvious that Zote history has continued to be intertwined with the Tyranid Hive fleets, and their intentions remain in enigmatic, leading to conflicts with the Imperium and the other factions of the galaxy. Words are hard.
So Space Marines killed a Zote?
Yeah, one Zote showed up and basically tried to convince an entire chapter, or not chapter, like an entire
company,
squadron, company, thank you, of Imperial Fists that the Tyranids weren't that bad. And using its mind control and all that other stuff. And when it kind of basically looked like it was failing, the Zote charged them. And it took a lot of bolter rounds to bring it down, but they killed it eventually.
Interesting. I'm wondering why he was backing the Nids in that way.
They're just
hungry, dog. Just let them eat.
I think it's kind of in the same way that the Gene Stealer cult does. And in fact, I think the Gene Stealer cult, in a lot of ways, that the Hive Mind has used the Gene Stealer cult to replace the Zotes in effect. And my guess would be because, as this sort of suggests, the Zotes started to fall out of favor with the Hive fleets in like M38, M39. So right about the time that the Hive fleets were entering the fringes of the galaxy for the first time is when the Zotes kind of seemed to fall out of favor with them.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And it is, there's a lot of tidbits here that kind of suggest the Zotes are an entire other race, which brings me hope that we'll see Zotes have a bigger impact and a bigger place in flavor in Warhammer 40K going forward.
Agreed.
I'm wondering if because they're so like psychically connected to one another, if like the hive mind maybe overpowered them. And like, kind of, you remember in, I think it was the second Starship Troopers movie where there was like that one, I think it was a chick that was a psychic essentially, and she would see like premonitions of what would happen in the coming days, like as the horde kind of came through.
And the one of the bugs like hacks her brain.
Yeah,
and she starts like feeding them secrets and stuff.
Yeah, and then there's also the one where like the guy that was he wasn't the Sky Marshal, but I think in the third movie he like starts thinking of them as like a god and almost like he panders to them and like he believes like they're a god and like I'm assuming it's something similar. I'm wondering if maybe it's something similar to that effect. Again, words are hard.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think so. And honestly, the more that I sit with the idea that the Zotes made the Tyranids and then, you know,
lost control.
Their own creation bit them, and now they're essentially running from the Tyranids. They made the Tyranids to fight something, and either they won or they lost. Mm-hmm. And the Zotes started running away from the Tyranids, and the Tyranids caught the Zotes, but the Tyranids are also running away from whatever the Zotes were fighting.
Yeah, like almost made them in their image and then lost control of them. Kind of situation.
Kind of what we were discussing, yeah.
Yeah. To keep going with history, in the era Indominus, in the early 42nd millennium, the Zotes had been absent from the galaxy for many generations, for a long time. It was then that the Zote known as the Archivist suddenly appeared to the Imperial agents on the precipice. This was a makeshift void station near the 7th Blackstone Fortress, which served as a base for expeditions that explored and plundered it. Presenting itself as a data trader, the Archivist offered to assist the Imperial agents in quelling a tumultuous region of the Blackstone Fortress called the Seethe, where matter constantly shifted. In this region, the Archivist identified an ancient Zote spacecraft containing a relic called the Grailia Initiala. This spacecraft was owned by the Forerunner, another named Zote. However, in this case, we only know his name, and then he owned the spacecraft. This relic granted its possessor some control over the Seethe's chaotic turbulence and allowed access to the otherwise inaccessible areas of the Blackstone Fortress. As the Archivist helped the agents collect a substantial cache of Archaeotech artifacts, it eventually betrayed them, leaving them stranded in the heart of the 7th Blackstone Fortress. Since then, the Archivist has become a free agent, traveling the galaxy and salvaging other technological relics among the ongoing anarchy that has resulted from the opening of the Cicatrix Maledictum. So that gives you your why, Zotes, Emmy. This is what they do. They collect old Archaeotech. They're kind of obsessed with it.
Oh, okay. Interesting. It's like these Gen Zs that like flip phones.
Life is like a circle.
Zotes right? are Gen Zers that like flip phones.
Yeah. You heard that, it here like, first, Y2K folks. Aesthetic, and it's like, you didn't set a foot in that decade, but go off.
Wait till Nokia's come back.
Dude, the Motorola flip phone, the like folding screen phone that you can put into Razor mode that's been everywhere recently. And you're right. All of these kids that are playing with it are like between 17 and 20. I don't even know if the phone, it did. I guess it was a phone when they were like
born.
In diapers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. You guys remember the Sidekick? I want the Sidekick to come back.
Hell yeah, I love
that
thing. My sister-in-law
had one.
I had one.
Like a Helio also. That was another big thing.
Oh, yeah, man.
The N-gauge. Yeah.
Remember when phones were like toys?
Yeah.
We'll finish up here with Zote technology. Zotes are a highly intelligent alien species with advanced technology. Although they have retained the ability to interface with standard Tyranid biomorphs, which I think is really interesting, they can still use Tyranid weapons, which gives a lot of really cool kit bashing, like Zote army capabilities. They rely on biotechnology to survive in various environments, enhancing their metabolic and musculoskeletal system with a wide range of augmentations, such as atmospheric rebreather masks and synthetic organs for digesting alien proteins. Again, these dudes can eat anything, and it's kind of because they hacked their own system. One of their most terrifying technologies, however, is the psychic resonator, which enables them to communicate telepathically and implant messages directly into the minds of others. Leveraging their natural, manipulative, and diplomatic talents along with these devices, Zotes have positioned themselves as ambassadors, power brokers, and data traders on the fringes of Imperial space. So that's the thing that you were talking about earlier. The psychic, right? They can take their thoughts and make them your thoughts, and you won't even know it's happening.
Ooh, that's intense. So
it's horrifying. Like, it's cool, but it is horrifying at the same time.
But imagine this with the Azure technology of the Slan. Like, how fucking wild would this army be? Because I'd be more interested in running these guys in you know, in the fantasy setting, I think, than the 40K setting.
I can definitely see him fitting in with the Seraphon.
I'd want to see one of them use like an exocrine cannon. Like,
oh, right, like that? Like a bagpipe. Strapped to his back, or like even, slung under his arm.
He just squeezes it.
Even in places with strong Imperial authority, Zotes can spread their influence through proxies, exerting considerable power by weaving webs of coercion. Despite their actions, the true nature and agenda of the Zotes has remained a mystery. Their interests lie in acquiring advanced technological artifacts, and it seems little else. And that will wrap it up for our first look at Xenos Spotlight content. And we dropped a couple of other minor Xenos races that are on the short list for getting their own Xenos Spotlight, one of them being the Hrud, which are pretty interesting. And Marky, if I remember correctly, aren't the Talarian Dog Warriors one of your, like, kind of, these guys seem cool, I want to know more about them?
Are those the guys with the gnarly Promethean flamethrowers?
No, they're like they're a Xenos race.
Possibly, I don't recall.
I feel like at one point you brought it. Maybe it was the Chem Dogs, because you're right, there are the Chem Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Dog Warriors, the Talarian Dog Warriors, are kind of.
Oh, were these the guys that gave the Space Marines in 30K their what do you call it? Their little club? Or was that a different human race?
Possibly.
Or humanoid type race.
Yeah, I want to say the Talarian Dog Warriors have something to do with 30K, but I can't quite remember. But again, that's like that's why these races are interesting, because there's enough, there are little tidbits about them left from the Rogue Trader book all the way up to modern publications, but they're always hinted at. They're not. Yeah,
I can't remember the race that you were talking about, but there was one race in 30K that essentially gave Space Marines their little boys club thing that like spread. They respected them, and they adopted
you're talking about the warrior lodges of the Davenites. The Davenites.
Okay, Davenites, they're different. Okay.
Yeah, they're different. The Talarian Dog Soldiers are like essentially lizard men. Lizard men.
I love that. Okay.
So yeah, we definitely, and there's definitely a lot of fun ones. Let us know too, guys, the listeners, if you have a race that you really like. Emmy, you had something?
No, I did not. Sorry, Nugget was about to disrupt our recording. I was just looking at her like, don't even think about it.
Your little house Zote.
Yeah, my little house Zote. She's so cute.
Well, that'll wrap it up for episode 81 of Under the Hive of Madness, our first Xenos Spotlight. We'll be back with other episodes moving forward in this series, along with jumping into the Horus Heresy and a little bit more 30K lore soon. So keep an eye out for that. If you want to share your short stories, your lore, your spooky dookies with us, or maybe even your Zote army ideas with us, you can hit us up by email with underthehiveofmadness@gmail.com or jimdarkgaming@gmail.com.
You can also join our community on Discord. Not only can you talk to us about the lore, hobby, and tactics of Warhammer 40K, but you can get involved in other topics like Warhammer Age of Sigmar, Kill Team, Blood Bowl, Underworlds, Magic the Gathering, role-playing games, video games, and much more. You can also find Jim Dark Gaming on Facebook, Instagram, and Ryan and myself are on TikTok. You can also find us at underthehiveofmadness.com. Spelling and link of that will all be in the show notes. Help the podcast grow by liking and reviewing us wherever you get your podcast fix. We are on Spotify, Apple, Google, Audible, and many more.
And as a little bit of a teaser, at a time coming up in the future, Emmy and I are going to talk about Magic the Gathering, and specifically the Magic the Gathering and Warhammer crossover. So
that's right. The most ambitious crossover event in the whole history of everything Marvel Cinematic Universe has nothing on this. I'm kidding. It does.
I mean, that Godzilla crossover into Magic was pretty dope. I'm not gonna
lie. That was pretty dope.
I have thoughts. We'll get into it, but I have thoughts.
Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/underthehiveofmadness. All Patreon members get access to video podcasts with minimal editing, so you can see our beautiful faces and hear all of our amazing blunders. All Patreon levels get access to quarterly painting contests, plus we have our perks at higher levels, so go on over and check that out.
And merch is on. Merch is happening. It is on the way. And patrons get first crack at it. And what a race to start this season's leaderboards. Newcomer Blizzard Baron of the Warmongers claiming the top spot with her custom twin reactor, Atlan Reaper, the Ice Heart Inferno. She introduced early retirement to the Frostborn Phantom, cratering his four-season winning streak, leaving nothing but bloody slag of his ice skiff, Chillsteed Crusader, in her plasma-bathed wake. Race 1 of the Glacial Gauntlet, brought to you by Two Nobblers in a Coat, Innsmouth's oldest brewery. When you need a cold one, reach for the fun guy. We have been your degenerate Archaeotech hunters. The Administratum warned you to never hang out around. Spreading the rebellion, one listener at a time. 665.66 UHMR Chemrat Radio. Reminding all of you Chemrats, Hive Mice, and Sump Ghoulies to keep those dials fixed. Right here, same ratty frequency for a dose of the same ratty-ass attitude. In the Underhive's maze of steel and shadows, the four-armed Emperor's arrival foretells of impending doom. Four-armed razor claws, not but an omen of an unstoppable tyranny. For it is in these shadows that resistance withers.
We did it.
We need to start, like, attributing all of the, like, idioms and sayings at the end about the four-armed Emperor to, like, Trash Man Pete of the Sub Hollow said, the, like how Warhammer always attributes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.